This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Not at AM 950. I'm still in my basement. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Good to be with you today. Once again, broadcasting from my basement in my, in my house as I recover from hip replacement surgery. So basically, good to be with you today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A lot to get to today. Of course, obviously recapping Halloween. We've got an election tomorrow, and that's exactly where we're going to start. Every time we have an election on, I eagerly welcome on the Secretary of State of the state of Minnesota, Steve Simon. He's kind enough to join us to talk about the election and all the information you need to make sure your vote counts tomorrow. Secretary Simon, once again, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Hey, great to be with you. More importantly, how are you feeling?
It's a hip replacement surgery. You know, it's a standard Home Depot operation. So it's nice. I'm actually to one crutch now, which is good. I'm hoping I got to get off the pain meds so I can start driving again. And so I'm hopefully by the end of this week.
Good. Hey, any progress is welcome.
Indeed. I want to start off with something, and I do not want to make, this is not political. You've been in the political realm though this year, that a lot of people have come off after trying to, for lack of a better way to say it, try to create doubt within the system that we have for voting here in the state of Minnesota. And I want to start off with something which, at the end of the day, as anyone that wants to criticize our system can't get around, we have paper ballots. If a person has a question about an election, we can manually recount them. It is literally the safest system you could possibly have. Am I mistaken about this?
You are not mistaken. It is the gold standard. Yes. Minnesota is a paper ballot state, and those ballots have to be kept for close to 2 years after every election. So they're in warehouses. They're under lock and key somewhere, and people with doubts can, under certain circumstances, get to those ballots. So thank goodness we have that, and we're not like some other states where they do it a different way, and they don't have those storehouses of paper ballots. We do. But there are other ways in which the confidence in our system in Minnesota is well earned. One of them is just a matter of common sense. We, in 2020, for the third time in a row, were number one in America in voter turnout. That says a lot of things. One of the things it says is that people fundamentally know in Minnesota that it is an honest system. It is one of integrity. It is one of accuracy. And they know that because they keep showing up in droves. I'm not suggesting that everyone thinks the same way on elections policy. There are good people who I disagree with who have a different view from me on what the law ought to be. What I am saying is that in their heart, in their gut, Minnesotans know that the system is a good one. It's a decentralized one. It's an honest one. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep showing up in such huge numbers. In 2020, we were just shy of 80%. That is a huge vote of confidence. So I am a long-term optimist about our democracy in Minnesota and nationally. In the short term, we've got some real issues, nationally in particular, but that's a different subject.
With in just what the process is, as a Secretary of State, you'd oversee this. If someone had a question about, say, the presidential race, the votes in Minnesota, and wanted to actually manually recount the votes here, is that, I mean, I'm presuming there's a cost involved and they have to show that their right. intent here. I mean, what, you know, if I hear a lot of people saying, oh, we have questions, well, you can solve this fairly easily. What would be the process if someone wanted to recount a specific vote in the state?
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota law is quite flexible. So after an election, any political campaign or candidate, I should say, could ask for and foot the bill for a recount. If it's close enough, though, under state law, for a statewide race, that's 0.25%, it will be paid for by the taxpayer. But technically, someone could lose by 1 million votes, and if they want to pay for it, they could do a recount. And other states are similar, if not identical. For example, in Wisconsin, close state, no doubt, in terms of the presidential election, they did, at the expense of the Trump campaign and the Republican Party, they did a manual recount of the two biggest, and as it happens, bluest counties in the state, Dane County, which is Madison, and Milwaukee County, which is Milwaukee. They already did that, and it showed no appreciable discrepancy. The same kind of system exists here. So if someone's margin, when all the results are in, is a further spread than 0.25% for a statewide election, and they have the means to pay for it, they can do that. That wasn't done in Minnesota, and I think it wasn't done because people understood that the results were sound.
And I think that what I've seen from the discussions that have taken place this last summer, particularly in regards to this, is that it comes to that point, and it's a fish or cut bait point. You know, it's kind of one of those things where if you truly do think this is wrong, well, you can put the money down, you can do the recount, and then the minute you say that, kind of people walk away. They're also, I do want to also make sure I address one other thing, because I do believe in our election system here. There is some people that are trying to discredit the machines, the counting machines that are at individual location. Basically, these are glorified calculators with security. So basically, the paper ballots don't get exposed, couldn't possibly be corrupted. They get fed in there, and they're secure. But that machine itself is just a glorified counting machine, correct?
I mean, depends on your definition of glorified. It's sophisticated machinery. But yes, they count, they tabulate. They're called tabulators because they tabulate. And here's something that a lot of people might not know about. In terms of just transparency of the system. In every single place in Minnesota where there's that runs elections, there's something called, every year, including this year, something called a public accuracy test, where any member of the public, you don't have to be a journalist, you don't have to be an expert, you can just walk in onto the street, off the street, you don't need an appointment. Anyone can walk in and watch elections administrators. This is typically 2 or 3 weeks before an election, where whether you're in Hopkins or Bloomington or Duluth or whatever, they must, under state law, have this thing called a public accuracy test. Anyone can come in off the street, and they can observe elections administrators kicking the tires, so to speak, of the elections equipment, putting it through the paces, putting in sort of dummy ballots that are intentionally overvoted or undervoted to see how it reacts, see if it's tabulating accurately. They have to put those machines through the paces. So this isn't some closed-door process. In fact, it's the very opposite. We have a good system in Minnesota for certifying elections equipment. First, it has to be certified by a federal lab in a federal office, and then and only then is it eligible to come to Minnesota for our own second round of certification. And then there's the public accuracy test. So I'm quite confident that the machines are really good in Minnesota. They work well. They're extremely accurate. And we're lucky to have a system that's like that.
And one reality is as these questions have come up over the last few election cycles, the more I look at the Minnesota system, it's the best one I've ever seen. It's so clean, and there are enough fail safes to prevent any fraudulent behavior that anyone that at this point that is, you know, criticizing it either just hasn't spent the time to learn about it or is just trying to make political hay. And so I commend it. And it's not just you. I mean, you are the Secretary of State right now, but it's a system that's been created, and it works.
And can I just say, too, to put even a finer point than you did on it, it isn't about me or even this office. We have a good structure of laws in Minnesota, put there, by the way, mostly in a bipartisan way over the years and decades by Democrats and Republicans. That's been the tradition. That's been the norm. That's put us in a good place. And by the way, that system has largely been in place whether the Secretary of State has been a Democrat or a Republican. So it's really about the system that is a thoughtful one. Certainly not perfect, and there are reasonable people on either sides of the political divides that can have opinions about how it ought to be better or what should be added or subtracted. That's all okay. But fundamentally, I think we all have to acknowledge the system has served us well, and it has produced honest, fair, accurate, secure elections with integrity year after year.
Secretary of State Steve Simon, kind enough to join us. Let's talk about tomorrow. I have always said, and I've said this with you multiple times, as much as people like to talk about presidential years and the midterms, the reality is pound for pound, the elections that are going to have the most impact for you on a day-to-day basis are your local elections. And that's pretty much what we got across the board tomorrow, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about city council, mayors, school board members. I mean, this is nuts and bolts. This is likely to have a very direct effect on people's lives. And in many communities across Minnesota tomorrow, there are elections. And for your listeners, if you're not yet sure if there is one in your community, or if you think there is one but you're not sure exactly what offices, you can go to our website, which is mnvotes.org, mnvotes.org, and we've got a feature called My Ballot. You just type in your address, and boom, up comes basically kind of a sample ballot that shows you what the contests are in your jurisdiction. So maybe you have a mayor's race, or maybe you don't, but you have a city council race, or maybe you don't, but you have a school board race. You can find that out on our website, and you can find out where your polling place is by doing the same thing.
We should mention that there has been, and the Star Tribune, other newspapers, other news outlets as well have focused on, there is a renewed interest in specific races, particularly school boards. And this is where this really comes in important. I mean, yes, it's not something I think a lot of people, the glory of finding out about your school board candidates per se, but if you really can have, a few votes one way or the other, and you can change the complete total dynamic makeup of a school board or a city council very quickly. So, I mean, there are a lot of candidates out there who are running on one specific issue and that's it. They don't care about too much else what's involved with the job. They have that one issue. And so there is an importance. And one of the things I love about your webpage, which, by the way, I did use the My Ballot feature and I went there and I saw my ballot. I got mayor, city council, and school board. I saw all the races. Where applicable, where there is available, they have actually links to the candidates' websites. You can actually find out more about the individual candidates. I like that feature a lot.
Yeah, thanks. We'd like to think that the website is user-friendly. And then also, for those tracking election results tomorrow night, I would recommend this. Since it's not a statewide election, we take the information that the cities give to us. Probably the quickest, although not always, for these municipal elections are to go to a city website. You're welcome to go to ours at mnvotes.org and our elections results page, but you can also dual track it and go to your own city's website to find out up to the minute election results.
And we should say, I mean, there is going to be, in this election cycle around, I mean, clearly the one that's going to get the most, garner the most attention is the city of Minneapolis. Not only right. The mayor's race, city council race, but you have some ballot initiatives there. So there's going to be a lot of interest in those races as well. Are you anticipating a bigger turnout than normal in the city of Minneapolis?
I'd leave that to the experts with Minneapolis elections, but I will say all the ingredients are certainly there for higher turnout. And just to level set for your listeners, in the last mayoral election in 2017, 4 years ago, turnout in the city of Minneapolis was about 42.5%, which, of course, if that were a presidential election, would be disappointing, right? Because Minnesota's at near 80% in presidentials. But for municipal election, if you look around not only the state but around the country, that's pretty good. That's quite good, actually. So I think all the ingredients are there for it to be higher than 42.5%. Given that you've got not just a mayoral election, but three ballot questions on the ballot that have, produced a lot of energy and enthusiasm and passion.
By the way, and once again, it's not just Minneapolis, though. Pretty much every community has got some race going on out there, school boards especially. And once again, it's mnvotes.org. And my personal experience, you type in your zip code, it will ask you to verify your street address. Then it pulls up your ballot for you, wherever your street address, the number is on the street you're on. If applicable, I mean, a lot of times they can pull it up right away with the zip code. But there you go. You'll be able to see what's on your ballot and be able to run the races. And it's so important. What time will the election polling places be open tomorrow?
7 a.m. bright and early, and they close at 8 p.m. And one other thing I have to say is, remember, Minnesota, thank goodness, is one of the same day or election day voter registration states. So if any of your listeners out there, anyone listening to this, either is not registered to vote in Minnesota or is, but maybe moved recently or had a name change or for some other reason needs to, redo their election registration, no problem whatsoever. Just come on in. You can do it on game day in your polling place. And again, if you don't know where that is mnvotes.org. Go in, type in the information. It'll tell you right where to go, and you can register on game day.
One final thing here, and it's the age we live in right now. One of the concerns you as Secretary of State, other Secretary of States across the country have put forward is the concern over possible conflicts at the polling locations, and what that could lead to there. Once again, what, you know, if I'm going to vote there, what, you know, there are certain things people can't do, can't scream in your face right. And stuff like that, right?
That's right. I'd say two things I'd talk about. One is there's a general sort of 100-foot perimeter around the polling place. So no one is allowed in there unless they're a voter or they're an election worker or they naturally work in the building. So if your polling place is at a house of worship or a school, if you naturally work in that place, obviously you can go in. Other than that, and here's where the poll watching piece comes in, under Minnesota law, every major political party is allowed one, only one, not 20, not three, one. One person designated in writing by a political party can be there as eyes and ears, as a challenger or a poll watcher. That's it. But the rules are, to your point, Matt, the rules under Minnesota law is that challenger cannot speak to a voter, cannot get within 6 feet of a voter, and can only challenge the voter if it's based on personal knowledge, not a hunch or a vibe or a bad feeling. So no one can challenge another voter by saying, she just doesn't look right to me. Or I heard him speaking a non-English language out in the hallway. He just doesn't feel like a citizen to me. That's not good enough. It has to be, I know him. He lives on my block. He's 17 years old. He's not 18. That's personal knowledge. So those are the rules to make sure that voters have an experience that's free from interference.
I live in Hopkins. How important is this? I will be picking my hobbling caboose up and hauling myself to my polling place. I'll be able to do it. I'm not breaking any medical advice here, but I'm going to be with crutches. I'm going to my polling place. I'm going to vote because it is, in my mind, one of the greatest freedoms we have in this country, the ability to pick and choose who leads us. It is a magnificent right, and I've taken part in it every year as a veteran. I encourage you to do it as well because it is one of those things that a lot of people have fought for your freedom to have that. MNVotes.org, right, Secretary?
That's it.
MNVotes.org, MNVotes.org. 7 a.m. polls open tomorrow in Minnesota. They close at 8 p.m. Secretary of State Steve Simon. Secretary of State Steve Simon, kind enough to join us. Secretary, thank you very much. All my best. I know it'll be a really busy day tomorrow, so thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
My pleasure. Steve Simon, still in my mind, one of the best politicians I've ever met in my life. And the reason why is because he's not a politician. He just truly cares about being the best Secretary of State he could possibly be. And he is brilliant at it and an all-time favorite for me. I mean, really, Secretary of State Simon, absolutely, absolutely. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got to get it. Obviously, since we're talking elections, we'll talk more about that when we do return. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I guess we should do a little bit. Brett is joining us. He's over in the studios at the Palatial Broadcasting Complex. I am indeed still in the basement of my house. Yay, millennial power action. I am in the basement of my house. I had hip replacement surgery a little more than a week ago. Ow, by the way, side note, ow. I'm healing fairly well and doing that great, but obviously because, as Brett knows, through my late night text to you, dude, I am taking some serious drugs, man, to get through this.
Yeah, we got
to
have a little chat with HR, I think, tomorrow maybe about some of the drugged up texts you've been sending along.
I should not have included the word honey in that. Sorry, my bad. Anyway, I have to get into the office to do this. Ha ha, I caught you on the technicality. But I'll be doing this pretty much this week. I think I'll be doing the show, and hopefully, fingers crossed, I will be back in the radio station doing the show there coming a week from today. So hopefully, fingers crossed, all that's good. We're there. Brett, did you have a nice Halloween?
I did, yeah. I went to a friend's place, so I didn't have any trick-or-treaters at mine. But I live in kind of a weird condo building where you'd have to buzz in, so I doubt I would get any anyways. So, yeah, that's kind of what I was...
Do you have any neighbors that have young kids or not really?
No. There's, I think, one neighbor I can think of that has a kid under the age of, like, 20. Other than that, yeah, it's an older crowd.
Grouchy producer Meadows, the townhome complex that you all love. You know, actually, you know, one of the truth is that actually I feel comfortable with. I agree with you. A friend invites me, I'm going to go over because, you know, you feel pretty confident that you're not going to have too many kids. I have friends that were like, okay, hopefully the house doesn't get egged, and they're leaving a fairly busy stretch of trick-or-treating land to go on out. I always would feel a little guilty about that personally, but, you know, you've got the perfect setup for that.
Yeah, but I didn't have any last year and figure, well, this year I'm not going to get any, so I'm going to go do something else.
And Patrick doesn't count, does he? No.
No. Not at all.
I was surprised. Two things I noticed about trick-or-treating this time around. The first one was that so last year I think we talked about how it was much, much lower turnout. And not a surprise, it was the pandemic. As a matter of fact, it was as much as you know, Paul Gazelka and Kurt Dow were screaming about, open everything! The reality is we were on the cusp of what had been, was the worst surge we had during the pandemic. And so a lot of people, you know, understandably, and of course there was all the questions of how do you hand out candy and stuff like that. This time around, 75 kids, a little lower than we've had in the past. We usually were over 100, but 75, that's a solid turnout. Here is one of the cool things I noticed yesterday. I don't know if it's the fact that the supply lines have been interrupted and they're not... they're not flowing as cleanly as they have been, but I noticed a lot of homemade Halloween costumes, a lot more of them. And that was cool, man. That was cool. Especially some of the ones that, like, you know, where you clearly, like, one was dressed up like Belle, and the mom had, you know, had actually clearly made, this was not like a store-bought Disney costume. This was a homemade costume, and it looked great. A lot of kids going around and, like, you know, they play basketball or this, so they had their basketball gear on, but they look like a basketball player. I miss those days. I miss the days when you actually had people making your own costume at home.
What were you dressed up as last night?
Oh, I was dressed up as a hobbling guy getting you candy, so that's okay. And by the way, you can tell I answer that question about, what are you dressed as? The guy who's going to about to club you with a crutch. How about that? We go... How many kids I got at the door? 10. Okay, fine. Because the way we did it, and we still kind of had the protocol from last year, is I would take the candy, you would hold open your bag, I would drop the candy. If it made the bag, that's on you at that point. So I would have to do, because of this, and I did pretty good, I'd have to make repeated trips to the candy bowl because I don't have the Halloween set up at the front door like I probably should. So I had to, all right, I'll hobble back. I did pretty well, though. I didn't get dressed up. My youngest daughter had a fantastic costume. She went as a judge, but because they did not have any judge wigs, she just got an old man balding wig, which... swear to God, actually, if I was to grow my hair out, I'm balding. I'm fairly bald. If I was to grow my hair out and grow it long, you get it frayed out like, you know, founding fathers like, getting out there, it would look like that. And I swear, I looked at her, it's like, oh my gosh, she is my child, isn't she? if this condition actually becomes permanent with my youngest daughter, that's how she's definitely got that McNeil line in her, doesn't she? Holy cow. That's a disturbing, that's a picture of poor Dorian Gray asking you for a Kit Kat right there. So I hope everyone had a nice Halloween last night. It, of course, back to work. We noticed as well, and this is my wife's theory, is that the trick-or-treaters stopped pretty abruptly at about 8:30 last night. Now, that could have been them all getting sick from the Vikings and their play in that game. God, was that atrocious. But I think it was because it was a Sunday night. I think a lot of people just, you know, all right, we got our trick-or-treating in. Off we go. I love the kids in my neighborhood, the real young kids, the real young ones, who are, you know, at noon are already dressed in their Halloween costume and kind of just sitting out in their front porch, looking up and down the street, looking up and down, just waiting. And of course, it's like 4:15. Ding dong. A trick or treat, really? 4:15? Going doing a little pre-dinner trick or treating here, okay? It was fun. It was nice to see. I always love Halloween. And now get prepared to get smacked over the head repeatedly with Christmas, 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 because you ain't escaping that now anymore. It is instantaneous and in your face. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll get back more into the election questions that are coming up here. So the MinnPost had a good story about funding and who had raised more money. And I'm going to say something to the people out there that are the chanting that don't rank Fry. I got news for you. I don't know if you're going to be surprised, I think, at how this is going to turn out. And I'm not saying that Jacob Fry is going to win. But I think if you think to yourself that he's going to finish like 7th or 8th, I don't know if that's really actually what's going to happen here. We'll talk about that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, a November 1st edition of the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. Thank you very much to Todd Kolick, sponsoring AM 950 this week. You can sponsor us too. Now, Todd, he lives in Spain. Used to live in Minneapolis, St. Paul, moved out there when he retired, and, well, he loved the station. Can't really visit our clients, though, so he basically sponsors us. You can, too. 952-946-8885. That's 952-946-8885 for more information about that. Please get vaccinated and mask up. We don't want to return to the days when we didn't remember what day of the week it was. I agree with that. That's a good sentiment, Todd. And of course, obviously, his band Just Folk has the song Is It Monday out. I'll make sure I link to that up on social media a little bit later on. Once again, if you'd like to find out more information on how you could sponsor the radio station, you can just give us a call at 952-946-8885. Reminder, Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake, Robert Pilot and crew standing by in the 6 o'clock hour tonight. Make sure you stay with us through the evening right here on AM 950. So many things. For me, I've got a relatively simplistic ballot. I will say this. There's one in one race. There's a really mysterious candidate. It's the person's filed. They have been listed as running in all the documentation for the specific office. Unfortunately, I couldn't find head nor tail of anything about their campaign, whether it was on Facebook or on their own webpage or on other social media. I don't know. I tell you what, that's a big red flag for me. So I'm definitely not a person I'm going to be voting for if I can't find anything about what you stand for. So we did have, I do want to make sure I mention two parts of what we talked about with Secretary of State Steve Simon. We'll spotlight that interview. By the way, have that up here a little bit later on if you would like to listen to that. The first was that whenever you hear a Republican talk about, I have questions about the election, well, then all you have to do is look at them and say, well, then get out your wallet. You can pay for a hand recount of the entire state. You are entitled to do that. It is legal for you to do. If you have questions about this, we have paper ballots. You can go on out and recount the state of Minnesota. Count the paper ballots. And the reality is the Republicans want you to be dumb and not realize they actually have that very simplistic, you know, option on the table, that they basically, if they want to, they can go on out there and do their own recount. And, you know, instead they, and what they're doing is they're just doing the, oh, something's wrong. They want to scare people into believing, oh, you know, they stole it. You know, they stole it. Well, no, if you have a question on whether or not they stole the election, count the ballots. You have them all there. Well, Matt, that doesn't include the alien spaceship. Okay. Yeah. I'm not saying you're gonna appease these people, because idiots are going to be idiots. And one thing we have learned is that you can sit there with all earnestness and integrity, sit there and try to explain to a person why something doesn't work the way they think it does. and prove your point 1,000 ways from Sunday, and they'll say, I don't care, I still want to believe it, so meh. And that's just who these people are. So keep that in mind. The other thing I wanted to make sure we mention is that tomorrow there is a lot of school board races up for grabs. A few years back, in my kid's school district, I was alerted one time by a friend of mysterious candidates on the school board race who I had no idea who these people are. And I really hadn't paid attention. I'd been busy. I had young kids, let's be honest. I hadn't paid attention to it, but it was about 3 weeks before the election. So the person said, you need to take a look into this. And so I took some time and I did. And I discovered that there were three candidates who seemed to have been placed on the ballot, were running to, for lack of a better way to say it, represent a land developer who felt as if they could peel parts of the school district out of that school district and put them into a different school district. It would get him a better return rate on his investment. And so you had these people that were running for the school board who did not know a damn thing about the school board. And they had their answer. They would sit there and they say, I'm here for the property owner rights. I'm here for the taxpayer rights. Well, what do you think about repaving the stadium? I'm here for the property owner rights. Okay. What do you think about expanding out the pre-K programs at the elementary schools? I'm here for property owner rights. I mean, it was literally that ludicrous. These people had, I talked to two of them, and they both of them didn't have a damn thing that they could say. They just were both, ugh. But it was my first real run-in with an election that I was in, that I could vote in, that I realized, holy crud, this is how you get what's happened in some school districts where zealots, regardless of the cause, anti-LGBTQ policy, a pro-Christian policy. We talked about the story years ago. This was maybe 10 plus years ago of the school district in Texas, which had the school board election, and they put all the school board people on. The new school board was sworn in, and they immediately cut all funding for all their sports programs. And of course, down in Texas, this was a pretty big deal, and there's not much you could do about it. They just, they said the right things. They convinced enough people to vote for them, and they won. This time around, you have had howler monkey after howler monkey after howler monkey show up to these school board meetings, screaming about masks, screaming about vaccines. These people have no intention of keeping you safe or keeping you healthy. They do not. That is just not on their agenda. And now, in some school board races, those people are running. So I think you'd better, before you all of a sudden start electing people to your school board who are all of a sudden going to sit there on the school board and say, I'm filibustering the school board meeting. We're not going to get anything done until you do what I want to do, and I'm going to scream at the top of my lungs. Ah! And that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's bad enough that in the public meetings, these people are behaving like this. Imagine if you actually allowed one of them to become a representative of the school board on the board itself, the chaos they could cause there. So I am going to highly, highly encourage you. I don't care where you are. I don't care if you're in the smallest town in Minnesota or if you're in Minneapolis. I don't care if you don't have kids. I don't care if you've got 12 of them. You'd better know what's on your ballot, and you'd better vote tomorrow, because you could end up having some serious consequences for ignoring the election and not voting. Now, that being said, obviously a lot of attention is being focused on Minneapolis right now. I'll talk more about this. I want to mention this story in Axios Twin Cities. Friends and foes of the strict rent control ballot question in St. Paul have turned up the dial in debate ahead of Tuesday's election. Of course, once again, this is the St. Paul ballot initiative on rent control. Proponents say the initiative will protect renters from large increases that displace them from their homes. Opponents say the measure will halt the development of new buildings and exacerbate the housing shortage here. Political Action Committee's Sensible Housing Ballot has raised a whopping $4.4 million, mostly from developers and landlords, to fight rent control proposals in St. Paul as well as in Minneapolis. That's more than the two competing committees battling over the future of policing in Minneapolis have raised combined. Meanwhile, Housing Ballot is on a blitz, sending out text messages to mailers in both cities. The two organizations, and by the way, I can tell you, I've got friends who say they are getting inundated with emails, mailers, texts from about the rent control stuff. The two organizations fighting for rent control measures, Home to Stay Minneapolis and Keep St. Paul Home, say they're relying on volunteer phone banking and door knocking. The St. Paul measure could cap rent increases at 3% with a few exemptions for landlords, even if inflation remains high. In Minneapolis, voters would be given permission for the city council to draft an ordinance. The specifics would be up to council members. So, and even in Minneapolis, it obviously gives, there still is ways for that could be manipulated to a point. Opponents say the St. Paul ordinance would be the strictest in the country and would kill development of new apartments since it doesn't exempt new construction. Ryan Company is a developer of a massive Highland Bridge project that will eventually bring 38,000 housing units to St. Paul, said it would put future rental housing projects on hold until its lenders can figure out what the rent control policy will do. I've identified $150 million to $180 million worth that we will pause, said Tony Barranco, Senior Vice President of Real Estate Development for Ryan. Keep St. Paul Home campaign manager Tram Hong said landlords think the rent control measure is strict because they're used to a state that is light on tenant protections. Those are really thin-veiled threats to stop investing in the communities that we've seen over and over again, said the comments of the Ryan executives. It's hard to say how this one was going to go in St. Paul, since there's no good publicly available polling on the question. St. Paul is expecting low turnout and due to the non-competitive mayoral race as well. I would say the chances of, I mean, if you're looking at Minneapolis, St. Paul separately, I'd say St. Paul, the people that are trying to kill the rent control issue in St. Paul might actually be able to win St. Paul. I think it's going to be a harder sell in Minneapolis. I don't think they're going to be able to get away. I think that rent control is probably going to be coming to Minneapolis. But I will say too, I want to be clear, because once again, I've said this a few times to people out there, some people who've gotten upset with me, I'm glad I don't live in Minneapolis right now. I'm glad I don't live in St. Paul right now. These are pretty complicated questions, and there is no easy answer. I'm not going to deny that one of the problems that you have is that it will, to a point, stifle construction. It will. It will, you know, and it's kind of one of those things where you already have the margins in rent for landlords sometimes is pretty narrow. It can make that tougher. That being said, I agree with the person who was critical of the idea of we're going to stop all investment. It's Minneapolis, St. Paul. This isn't Des Moines, where if the people stopped all of a sudden investing in building in Des Moines, you actually could have a pretty big impact. The reality is that for every major company that doesn't develop land in Minneapolis or St. Paul proper, there's another company that's more than willing to get in there and start developing that land themselves. So the idea that all of a sudden, people are going to stop building buildings and, well, there's not going to be any demand to live in the city of St. Paul, so they're all going to move out to Burnsville. No, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So I'll be interested to see how it does. I mean, it's a sign Minneapolis and St. Paul are both getting to be such large metro areas that this is an issue which has to be addressed. But you can't have it like San Francisco, where it is outrageous beyond outrageous that you are paying literally quite, in some cases, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of rent each and every month just for an apartment the size of two closets. And that's what you're getting. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of that goes. I was also, if you read this is a story from the 29th, so from Friday, over at MinnPost. Both sides of the public safety amendment, they talk about, this is talking about the financial reports that came on out for the specific races this election cycle around. When you look at both sides of the public safety amendment, both have raised a lot of money there. Yes for Minneapolis raised $1.3 million during the reporting period. All of Minneapolis raised slightly less than $1.5 million during the same reporting period. We've mentioned the rent control opponents raising more than $4 million in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. Jacob Fry continues to outraise his opponents in the mayoral race. Criticism of Fry's performance as mayor in the presence of numerous candidates clamoring to unseat him has not impacted his ability to raise money. He's continued to outraise his competitors. His campaign raised another $292,000 during the most recent reporting period and has more than $150,000 left to spend. Kate Knuth raised $91,000, so basically a third of what he was able to pull aside. The rest of the candidates, for the most part, in a similar kind of a situation with that kind of the money that they've raised. And, once you fall behind, it's hard to catch up. And the incumbents still usually do have an advantage when it comes to this. I'm going to take a break. When I come on back, I want to specifically talk about Jacob Fry and about what's going to happen tomorrow. And I also, as well, want to talk a little bit more about the what's going to happen with the Minneapolis Police Department with the ballot initiative on that as well. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You are somebody that I don't... AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I'm going to say again, I am glad I don't live in Minneapolis. Tomorrow's election is going to be huge. It's going to have impacts and ripple effects across the board. Starting with the mayor's race, I know that there is, my social media feeds have been inundated with people putting out signs saying, don't rank Fry, don't rank Fry, because using the ranked choice voting as a kind of a weapon in the election itself. As a way to send a message. And I'm not saying Jacob Fry is going to win this mayor's race tomorrow. I am not saying that in any capacity. But you've got to remember that there is way too much tendency to fall in love with the end of the story before we get to the end of the story. And when it doesn't come out like you are, people, oh, I thought that was supposed, it didn't happen. Oh. Steve Simon came on my show earlier this hour and said the turnout for 2017 was 42.5%. And for a municipal race in an off year, that's fantastic. But that's not a lot of people. And I can guarantee you right now, if I was to say to myself, how many people in the city of Minneapolis would want Jacob Fry to get another term? 25%? I'd probably say that's a fair amount. Well, if 25% of the people that vote tomorrow, if it's 42.5% of the population of the voting population of Minneapolis votes tomorrow, and Jacob Fry gets 25% of that, he's going to be well on his way. You better hope that no one ranked him because, that will probably put him over the top. There was the only time I've ever seen youthful excitement translate to electoral success was Sunday liquor sales. And I've said from the ever since that moment, you guys got to figure out what in the world made that click. Because every election cycle, I hear the young people out there saying, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and this extremely progressive candidate's going to win. And they get destroyed. And people just don't show up and vote. And the people just don't show up and vote. And not only do the people not show up and vote, a lot of the people they themselves feel are the primary target demo for said candidate or said ballot initiative, they don't show up to vote. There is an enthusiasm gap that exists. And as much as you see a lot of people out there saying this, I guarantee you, Jacob Fry's got his pockets of Minneapolis, which do like him. And if you think, I know that you guys kind of enjoying writing his epitaph. The reality is that this is not over. And I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I don't think it's easy. I feel fairly confident to say that it's going to be a lot closer than people are going to want to think. Now, that being said, I'll also say this about the police initiative. I agree wholeheartedly with people saying, you know, what the heck are you guys going to replace this with? You know, there's a good cartoon in the Star Tribune SAC cartoon where he basically is as the you know, assembled instructions on how to build a parachute. And that's the fairly well spot on analysis here. You hope things are going to turn out. You don't know. And if that ballot initiative passed, I could see by the end of the week, could I see the state National Guard be out policing the streets of Minneapolis? Absolutely. I could see the majority of the Minneapolis Police Department quitting. I could easily. And then we got to figure out what the heck you're doing. But at the same time, I'm not going to dismiss the fact that the Stallings case alone, there is no remorse. There is no contriteness. There is no attempt by the police department to change their ways. They clearly have multiple problems with how they think of the people of the city of Minneapolis, how they treat the black community, how they treat the Native American community, how they treat the media. They're seeming to be supportive of white supremacy. This undeniable them versus us mentality, with them being the police and or them being the city of Minneapolis and all the people there and us being the police department, then that's the line, that those are the enemy. Not that you're in Minneapolis, that it's actually some sort of front line in some foreign war, for God's sakes. I have yet to see anyone on the other side of this argument say what you're going to do to clean up that police department. So the reality is I don't know what's going to happen there either. But if your whole argument was, well, we'll try to scare you into not voting for things, people in Minneapolis are pissed off about how things have gone with the Minneapolis Police Department. And if you don't put forward some choice, some option, something is showing some kind of willingness to change, well, there's the other option on the table. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Brett here today. Brett, Matt is over on Facebook. He thinks it's going to be a pretty high turnout tomorrow in Minneapolis. I think so, too. It's interesting to hear Steve Simon, though, in that earlier interview say that it was a great turnout in 2017 with 42.5% of the people turning out to vote.
Yeah, I do kind of remember that. That was just after Trump got elected, and I think a lot of people were engaged in politics. Would have been nice if they were engaged the year before then, but yeah.
Heaven forbid. Yeah, it's. I hope there's a lot of people in Virginia that are engaged in politics now because, I'll get to that a little bit later on this show. Just it is frustrating having this experience where I'm basically kind of stuck and I'm watching a lot of media and stuff like this. There are specific narratives which are just obnoxious that get pushed forward. And it might be, it might affect these races, it is disturbing.
You mean the narrative that Democrats shouldn't even show up? It's just Republicans are going
to
win.
Democrats are about to get destroyed. And, sure, Donald Trump trying to overthrow the government, but hey. And that's their entire argument. But hey, the people that follow them sure hate Democrats. Like, that's a selling point, but they sell it as a virtue. And I'll get to that a little bit later on. Well, apparently Canada can't take the heat anymore. The International Falls City Council, Brett, has decided it's time to end the era of longstanding tradition of dressing up its beloved bear statue. The reason? Smokey is the face of fire safety and deserves our respect, not affection. So apparently they were changing his shirt, stylish, representing, as some might say. And apparently they feel as if Smokey the Bear, a statue of Smokey the Bear, not an actual bear, mind you, but a statue is somehow not in line. By having that statue have a shirt on, it's not in line with the true meaning of Smokey the Bear.
So you can only...
Have you been to International Falls? You've seen the Smokey?
I have not seen that specific Smokey the Bear statue in International Falls. No.
Is it a total smoke show? I mean, is it a little, you know, we want to be careful, put a shirt on that. That's too attractive. I don't know. I mean, the Smokey should be portrayed as a dignified, firm, and friendly symbol of wildlife prevention. Or wildfire prevention. Wildfire prevention. It's a dignified, firm, and friendly symbol of wildfire prevention. God, man, you are selling it. According to the Forest Service and the United States Department of Agriculture, I guarantee you, at the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service, there is probably an entire department that this is their focus every day is Smokey the Bear. Think about that.
I want that job.
I do, too. I mean, the shirt, no shirt debate. I mean, we were going over that for years. Really? Really? That was your job, okay? The city council checked in with a few other cities that have host iconic statues, including Bemidji, which has Paul Bunyan. Yeah, in Bemidji, remember the drunk guy broke off his arm. Wasn't he broke the arm off? You remember the guy was dangling from the statue?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
In Blue Earth, the Jolly Green Giant. Try my Mexicorn. In Alexandria, the Big Ole the Viking. I don't think anyone's sitting here and saying, well, you know, how they're dressed is the dignified element of it. I mean, does anyone say that Paul Bunyan didn't wear the flannel correctly? I mean, well, Jolly Green Giant is Leaf Dude, man. If you're going to be upset with how anyone's dressed, it's, you know, Johnny Strong Breeze over here is going to be given, let everyone see the Lesueur peas. You know, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here all week. Oh, that would be a disturbing thing. I think we want to be careful with the Jolly Green Giant. They have, they got the loon in Virginia. They've got the big perch. I mean, would I find it more fun to see a pair of pants on the perch up in Ore? There's a big perch. There's a big perch out there. Put a pair of pants on it. That'd be hilarious. Now, apparently Smokey the Bear, firm, dignified, and a friendly symbol of wildfire prevention.
Always looking out for the best interest, the dignity of Smokey the Bear. That's what matters.
International Falls Mayor Harley Droba explained to the Star Tribune, they thought it was kind of crazy that we did decorate our stuff. So Smokey will no longer don things. Now he's just basically wrapped in head to toe in Christmas lights. But hey, dignity, you know? You know? Dignity! You watch any of that Vikes game last night?
I fortunately did not see any of it. I didn't miss much, it looks like.
Oh, my God. I listened to it for parts while I was handing out candy. I imagine if I was watching it, I mean, I was listening to it not through the local broadcast. And I think Paul Allen does a fantastic job with those broadcasts. I really do think he's one of the best play-by-play guys I've ever heard in my life. He is very good. But it was very interesting hearing the national call, the kind of the neutral national call. Gullick was on it. I don't know who the other guy was.
Oh, was it Kevin Harlan who used to do the Wolves way
not
back in
Not Kevin
the day?
Harlan!
I thought he used to do the Sunday Night Football on the radio. Maybe not anymore.
I don't know. He wasn't on that one. Maybe he's doing Monday Night. Is he doing Monday Night game? Anyway, maybe he's doing the World Series. Could be doing that too. But it was a national, and I'm not sure exactly who the team was, but I mean, Gullick was one of them. He was the color guy. But the reality is they would say, it's like, what in the world? I heard them basically the end of the first half, and this is just such Vikings football, it's not even funny. They have the ball, they've got, I think they had two timeouts, 49 seconds left, and they do the equivalent of throw a 5-yard pass and then take a knee. And like any other legitimate team, any other team would be trying to score points. And somehow the Vikings look at a 10-7 score and say, well, it's close enough for us. You know, or it was a 10-3 or something like that. It's close enough. We got a big enough lead. We don't need to try to score anymore. But it sounded like that Kirk Cousins couldn't hit the broadside of a barn from inside the barn. He could, he just... He, and listening to their call, this is, you know, like I said, I was listening to the national call on this. Listening to their call, they're like, what in the world is he throwing at half the time? And he missed wide open receivers. He missed a lot of people. It was just a bad game. And I'm bringing this up for this reason. How many of you clowns sat there when we were talking about $2 billion worth of taxpayer dollars? And I know what the price they put on it. We've already talked about the road improvements, the sewer improvements, the electronic improvements, all the crap we had to provide at taxpayer expense for the Super Bowl, all that stuff. When they were saying, wow, this is a lot of money for a football team, the first words out of your, you build championships with a brand new stadium. You win championships with stadiums. No, you don't. That's basically what you've done is put a rose on a pig. It's just, ugh. There is nothing that is, the longer this goes on, the longer this facade goes on, I just want to keep reminding people is this was as enjoyable? Did you really enjoy that game last night? Did you walk away feeling like, wow, it's great being a Vikings fan? Or were you hanging your head going, oh my God, the people that paid money to go see that game, they paid money to go in, to sacrifice their Halloween night, go in and watch that game and watch a backup quarterback who we should have demolished tear us to shreds. And yeah, it wasn't the biggest game, but it was a backup quarterback. The fact they won, they tore us to shreds. It seems like there's an element of the team that's trying to win some sort of ideological debate behind the scenes, and they're losing badly because if you're going to try to do that, you'd better not suck at football, because that's why the only reason anyone would ever listen to you is that if you're really good at the game. But if you guys suck, if you can't hit a player 5 feet away from you, you sitting there and telling me about how you need to respect my anti-vax ways. Well, I'll respect you when you can hit the wide open receiver. How about we do it that way? You have a coach who, I mean, I feel sorry for Zimmer. But anyone on that team, I feel sorry for Zimmer, because I think that he has basically been handed the ultimate crap sandwich and been told to do something with it in the light of this stadium deal. And there's only so much he can do. And the reality is that you walk away from that game. If you are a fan of this team, you walked away from that game. I turned the game off in the third quarter, said, they're not going to win this game. They're just not going to win this game. And I went off and I did a puzzle and I put a picture of it. It's a good puzzle. It was a fun puzzle to do. I did a puzzle. I would rather have done a puzzle than listen to this. And so, no. You whining mules who are Vikings fans, who play to be the tough guy, who want to be the tough guy, Viking fan, tough guy. Who, when we were saying, holy God, you want to spend how much money on a football stadium? Sat there and said, oh, you can't be a top-tier city unless you got a football team. You feel like a top-tier city with that crap? Seriously, you feel like you're a top-tier city on the planet with that monstrosity? Please. We'd actually improve our visibility ranking if that team left. We would. And the entire notion, this entire idea that somehow, some way, that if you build a stadium, guess we'll be rolling in Super Bowl trophies. There'll be one every block. No. They still suck. The end of the first half thing, where they all of a sudden have a minute and 30 seconds, a minute and 10 seconds, 52 seconds, 2 minutes to do something. How many times have I seen a team up by 3 points, 4 points, 6 points, kneel on the ball and say, good enough for us. We're leading at halftime because Lord knows that's all that really matters, isn't it? No one cares about what happens at the end of the game. It's how we are leading at half. That didn't change at all. You're going to have another team coming in here and say, we need a $4 billion basketball court, or we need a $7 billion ice arena that floats in the sky. And the reality is that tomorrow, the same people who sat there and said, you know, the Vikings make you a top-tier city in the planet. No, they don't. That makes you free. Shut up. Shut up, you idiot, because you clearly don't know anything about what makes a top-tier city if you think that crap fest somehow makes the aroma of this town smell lovely. No. And they're going to ask for it. And we have money we could use for schools, money we could use for God's sakes. How many roads in the state, how many bridges in the state need to be fixed? You have clearly some major problems with our healthcare system, including a massive need for investment in outstate medical care in rural Minnesota. Broadband, for God's sakes, across the state. And we're going to have the same people, many of whom, and let's be honest, many of whom are, you're just taking all my money with taxes, all of a sudden turn around and say, you know, if we built the Timberwolves a big basketball court for $4 billion, you might as well just give us the next 40 years worth of NBA championship trophies, because that's how it's going to work. Or if you basically try to tell us, all of a sudden, yeah, you're a top-tier city by having a insanely subpar team that underperforms at every freaking turn they possibly can and is an embarrassment. How many of you today, how many Vikings fans went into the office today and bragged about that game, huh? Your Packer friends coming away, couldn't wait for you to get in the office here. You feel like you're a top-tier city? You feel like you're on the verge of championships? Please. I am going to rub this in every stinking time because that is not worth the amount of money we spent to give a billionaire a billionaire's playground, a facility that even if they were good, the vast majority of us will never have the money to afford one ticket to one game. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And the more I think about it, the more it makes me angry. We still are here and we still are too stupid to learn our lesson. That, yeah, it might just be a good idea for us to say, hey, you know what? We'll help you a little bit here. We'll give you a few, maybe at most a quarter of the cost in taxpayer dollars. But, you know, you need to pay for your own thing. And when they sit there and say, well, maybe it's time to move the team to St. Louis. Maybe it's time. And they go out there and they do that shin rub. And they, oh, yeah, I can move the team here. Say, good luck. Have a nice time. Because the reality is that was one of the worst investments I have ever seen. And quite literally, the longer this goes on, the worse this is, the worse you feel about this team, the more embarrassed you are about this team, the more clear it is that it's decades away from winning any kind of championship, let alone the NFC North again. The reality is that that stadium didn't do us anything outside of drain our pockets. But good news, once again, if you have $3,000, you might be able to afford a family of four to go to one game. Hopefully it wasn't last night's game, because then you'd feel like you got ripped off. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Every stinking time I'll bring that up. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll get into the coronavirus update for today. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Well, and once again, looking at the cases from the Department of Health, including 2,857 newly reported cases, 25 newly reported deaths. The state's total death toll now is 8,694. And for the first time, the state is providing reinfection cases, meaning a person who's been infected with the coronavirus more than once Monday's report included 7,597 reinfection cases, which represents the entirety of the pandemic. So that might seem like a lot, but when you're looking at what is the total number of people, it's 700,000. It's a very minimal amount. It's, you know, 1% have been reinfected at all. As of November 1st, Minnesota had 8,184 instances of reinfection since the start of the pandemic. Of that total, 587 were already included in the state case total as separate cases due to discrepancies in matching people with multiple tests, including the remaining 7,597 reinfections, as the case overview pushes today's figure count to 7,597 are the reinfections being added to the new cases. So it was basically them explaining why all of a sudden there was such an astronomically large number of new cases, and what they were explaining as well, it's not new cases, it's now we're separating those out and we've counted them again. As of October 28th, the state reported that 3,468,379 people had received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,306,034 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has also administered 401,424 booster shots. Yay, go team, go. Like to see that. Through October 29th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 908, down from 915 reported on Friday. Of those hospitalized, 214 people were in intensive care, 694 were in general hospital care. It's coming down, still pretty high, 908, but it is coming down. The 2,857 positive results on Monday's update were from 40,531 completed tests. Test positivity rate of 7.04, once again. One of the things we want to make sure we continue to mention is that is, you know, 5% is where the number you want it at. 5% of the tests come back positive. We haven't been below 5% since probably late spring. Yeah, the total number of reinfections, when I talk about people there, is only 1%. It's 797,984 people have reported coronavirus in the state of Minnesota. So it is a very minor amount. And for lack of a better way to say it, 99% of the people that got coronavirus did not get a new infection of coronavirus. So you've got a very good chance that whether vaccinated or not, much better chance if you're vaccinated, let's be honest. But still, if you get the coronavirus, you've got a 99% chance that you're not going to get it again. I think that that's an important thing to keep in mind. The Minnesota Department of Health is now going to provide a public tally of the COVID reinfections. The Minnesota Department of Health revealed such a figure Monday morning, saying the agency had recorded 8,184 instances of reinfections since the pandemic began. That number will be updated regularly. A reinfection is now defined as a person who tests positive for COVID-19 more than 90 days after previously testing positive. So it's, you know, you're going to have to make sure there's enough space there. That's obviously, I think, a good point. Department of Health called its standardized definition a key step paving the way for Minnesota Department of Health to now report reinfections regularly in the daily updates. Until now, the person who tested positive for COVID-19 multiple times had been counted just once by the Minnesota Department of Health on the situation update page. Reinfections, unsurprisingly, were rare throughout the first month of the pandemic, but from August 1st to October 14th of this year, the state has averaged about 35 reinfections every single day, according to the Minnesota Department of Health's data released on Monday. That doesn't surprise me, because we're getting to a point where a lot of people are getting vaccinated, and we talked about this over the months, year plus, we get into the fall season, as we start to get cooler, people are more inside, you're back at school. That doesn't surprise me at all. And I'm going to bet you a lot of the people who got reinfected were unvaccinated people who are under the foolish belief that I already had COVID, henceforth I don't need to get vaccinated at this point. Well, ta-da. Even if you've had COVID, you need to get vaccinated. Absolutely. The Minnesota Department of Health also stressed that continued importance and effectiveness of vaccinations, which not only reduce the chance of hospitalization and death from COVID, but also reduces the chances of being infected in the first place more effectively than natural immunity that comes with overcoming a COVID infection. The agency cited a CDC policy published last week looking at hospitalized adults from across the country, which found that unvaccinated people who had previously been infected with COVID, meaning they had quote-unquote natural immunity, were five times more likely to test positive for COVID than patients who were fully vaccinated and never been infected. The state Monday said 59.4% of Minnesota's total population, including children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine, have completed the vaccine series. The latest test positivity rate was 7.04%. There's also been 57,000 breakthrough COVID infections in vaccinated Minnesotans, which compromises less than 1% of the total number of COVID cases recorded in the state. But once again, and by the way, bring me the news. They're at least including that in the last paragraph of the of their story, as opposed to other places, which are, that's the lead. Oh, there's had a breakthrough case. Yeah, in less than 1% of the population. Most of the people that are getting sick are unvaccinated. That's just the reality of it. And you can't argue with that any way, shape, or form. It's just, that's the way it is at this point. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break, come on back, more on the coronavirus update, and then I got to take the Democrats to task, because you are allowing the narrative way too much to be written about what's going on in this country right now. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Let me finish up the coronavirus update. Some people making some comments in regards to the elections coming up tomorrow, as well as also one or two other issues I want to make sure I get to. I don't think Dr. Scott Jensen, who we like to call the witch doctor. Which doctor is it going to be this week? Is it the doctor who's actually a doctor? Or is it the guy that thinks that the horse dewormer is the cure to all that ails you? I don't know. Which doctor will we see? It's the witch doctor, Scott Jensen. The two-dose COVID vaccines are far better at preventing COVID infection than natural immunity, new research says. Wow. The study published Friday, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention looked at two groups, unvaccinated individuals who had previously gotten COVID and fully vaccinated individuals who had never been infected with COVID. The study found the group with natural immunity was 5.49 times as likely to test positive for COVID than the fully vaccinated group. So even though you had COVID, and even though that, you know, these people say natural immunity is gonna take care of us, the reality is you still are five times more likely to get COVID than a person who has been unvaccinated, or a person who has been vaccinated. I should say, a person who has been vaccinated. The data demonstrates that vaccination can provide a higher, more robust, and more consistent level of immunity to protect people from hospitalization from COVID-19 than infection alone can at least 6 months, the CDC said in a news release. Natural immunity is off-cited talking point about among anti-vaxxer groups and the vaccine skeptic crowd, who apparently, God, I'm. Where is your research? You guys are all saying I'm doing my own research. I'm presuming you got a lab set up somewhere. I'm presuming if you guys have done all your own research, I mean, this would be a no-duh. You can basically have an easier thing. Okay, we'll get some people who are vaccinated who haven't had COVID, and some people who are unvaccinated but have gotten COVID, and you're all healed. Okay, great. Let's see who has a likely chance of getting more COVID. Oh, the unvaccinated who already had COVID, they're five times more likely. Well, my research is done. Aren't you doing research? Because it sounds like you're not doing research. Guys, your research sucks. You need to be doing better research. This is not me saying, I'm not telling you to do research. You're the guys that are saying, I'm doing my own research. You know, research basically, if your research is basically only finding, you know, social media memes that back up your point of view, that's not research. That's pathetic. By the way, once again, it's often cited among anti-vax groups and the vaccine skeptic crowd that include Minnesota gubernatorial candidate Scott Jensen, who has asked why natural immunity is being ignored despite being a far more effective than vaccines, a claim that has already been proven before the release of this most recent study. So, Yeah, he's kind of an idiot because, you know, I don't know. I'm presuming the DR in front of your name, Scott, is actually for, a doctor's license. You actually went to medical school. Because this would seem like it's a pretty worthwhile study that shows that what you've been saying not only is inaccurate, but you seem to have pulled that out of the same place you're jamming the horse dewormer. Once again, you have said that natural immunity is being ignored despite being far more effective than vaccines. Where's your research about this? Because I've got a study here that says that that's not right. So let's get your research out here, Dr. Jensen, and see where it is. Or is it just a bunch of social media memes? Because it seems to me that this study itself is smacking you around pretty bad. While natural immunity does offer individuals at least some level of protection, it's unclear just how effective it is and how long that protection lasts. It's also worth noting that natural immunity requires someone actually to get COVID, which carries a slight risk of death, hospitalization, and long-term symptoms. The study published Friday. Yeah, and that's one thing you want to kind of gloss over here. It's like, we want you to get sick and possibly die. But here, on the good side, if you don't die, sure, you'll be bankrupt with health problems and with bills for the rest of your life, and you'll probably have health conditions that will need treatment for the rest of your life. But the good news is I read somewhere online that you're going to be better off than other people. Good going. Pass. Hard pass. The study published Friday looked at hospitalized adult patients across 9 states, including in Minnesota. I'm sure Republicans, far righters, I'm sure they were all lying. All those patients were lying. Because if they're not, your narrative gets blown to bits. So they must have all been lying. And the doctors were lying. And all the scientists were lying. And Matt McNeil is lying. Am I? From Minnesota, including January through September of 2011, the vaccinated group totaling 6,320 people. So not exactly like 5 guys. They had a pretty good crew here. I mean, I'm sure your anti-vaxxer research groups that you're pulling in have just as many people as this. It's not your cousin Lou, your cousin Lou's dog, your cousin Lou's dog who had another dog that he lived down the street, and that guy there, and then some guy named Phil who basically shows up on my chat networks online. That's my research department. Especially the dog has a lot to add there. A lot to add. Okay, I think we get the point of this. Even if you've had COVID, you are 5 times more likely, if you've had COVID and you're not vaccinated, you are 5 times more likely to get coronavirus again than a person who has been vaccinated and has not had coronavirus. Essential Health says it's dismissed dozens of employees who've decided to not get the COVID-19 vaccine. Monday was the health system's deadline for employees to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Essential Health announced the requirement in early August. An Essential Health representative said that 49 employees decided against the vaccination did not choose to seek an exemption, so they have been dismissed. While we're sad to see them leave, we respect their decision. We appreciate their good work, wish them well, and these individuals are eligible to be rehired at Essential Health if they change their mind. Essential Health said in a very gentle release. The company says that 99% of its workforce is now either vaccinated against COVID-19 or has applied for an exemption. Evaluations on exemption requests continues. But once again, 99%, or as Republicans will say, everybody is being violated. Ah! So tired of this narrative stuff. The reality is this is a handful of clowns. It's just a handful of clowns. And we can show them all the evidence. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A really quick side note here. Boyd Hubert from Carrier 11 has been admired, celebrated TV reporters of the country. He announced he has cancer. All our best to you dealing with that. I'm 53 years old. I can't tell you how many people I've known that have gone through cancer. A lot of them have gone through it successfully and been treated. I hope all the best for you, sir, and all the best to your family. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. An interesting point being made up on social media, listening to the show, talking about if the police amendment in Minneapolis fails, that the people that have been, the question is, what are you going to do? I mean, if we basically are going to go back to status quo, if it does fail, you know, the Stallings tapes alone warrant a massive cleaning of house over there, which you can't do because the union has written the laws so that basically they can shoot rounds at civilians. They like to say they're hunting while they defend the integrity of white supremacists and beat people in the street. And there are no consequences for any of this stuff. So for all the people that are determined to beat the police amendment, if it does get defeated, people are going to be looking at you and saying, well, what do we do now? Because right now, you've basically validated what the police have been doing. And I don't think anyone can honestly look at what they've been doing and saying that they've been good police officers. They've been a freaking nightmare. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting tomorrow, not only in Minneapolis, but as well. Virginia is going to have they've got their governor's race. I think one or two other states have some larger issues up. But I have had the interesting position this week of being somewhat sedentary because of the hip replacement surgery and having to watch a lot of news and read a lot of news. And Brett and I were talking a little bit earlier, and he kind of tagged it. I mean, the way that they describe Virginia right now, the national news people describe Virginia, is sort of one of the things, why are Democrats even going to show up and vote? You know, hey, at one point, sure, maybe the Democrats were barely leading, but now our internal polling says they're down by 50 points. Now, I'm not going to deny that that race is going to be tight. But I have yet to see any kind of, if the shoe is on the other foot, the media report on a race like that in that kind of capacity. That just does not happen. There is a narrative that's being pushed, which in my mind is really crossing, the media in this country is crossing the line from reporting the news to trying to create the news. And it's very disturbing, to say the least, because the way they do it is try to make it seem like, well, I brought up the point about the breakthrough cases on coronavirus. The way that that's reported, holy God, you'd think that that's the worst problem with the entire coronavirus. And then you discover it's less than 1% of all the cases are breakthrough cases, which means 99% of the cases are not breakthrough cases, which means the unvaccinated, which means why aren't we screaming at the top of our lungs about, wow, unvaccinated people need to get vaccinated? Because that would seem to be the news story. You're burying the lead, and not even kind of close, you are intentionally making it seem like the lead is a lesser story by trying to make it seem like, make the right wing feel good about themselves. Sure, you're out there being a belligerent idiot saying that you're not going to get vaccinated. So to throw you a bone here, we'll start it off by saying that, yeah, there are some breakthrough cases. And so the idiot Republican who's sitting at home who's saying, I'm never going to get vaccinated, says, see, there's a case where a guy got shot and then he got sick. See, I was right all along. And the news should just basically be this. I mean, if you're doing news, it should be this. 99% of all cases are in unvaccinated people. But if you do that, because that's something the right doesn't want to hear nowadays, and particularly the right that likes to sponsor news programs and media. Well, then heaven forbid, because they don't want to hear that. Let me tell you something. Your news outlet's biased. Why? Well, because they reported 99% of people who get coronavirus are unvaccinated. Well, that's not bias. That's just math. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it. And because I don't want to hear about it, I'm just going to call you a liar. And then, see, you're just lying. You're just making it up. See, done. Done. And so it's now to garner the validity of the idiots. The news media almost seems to be trying to, well, how would a far-right lunatic Trump fan who's screaming at the top of their lungs at a school board meeting, want this story to be presented. Ta-da! Democrats might want it. Virginia, it's over. It's over. And that's how they're presenting it. Now, I will say this. There is a problem here. NBC did put out a poll this weekend where they talked about Biden's approval on this, as well as individual party approval on certain issues. Joe Biden had 69% approval rating on COVID in April. In October, it's 51. That's 18 points down. Still is a positive side there. The economy, he took over an economy that was in shambles. In April, he had 52% approval rate. It's down to 40%. Even worse, when you look at what's ahead, they break down what Republicans and Democrats, how people favor Republicans and Democrats on certain issues. Republicans hold a double-digit advantage on border security because they have created that issue out of thin air. There really isn't a border security issue, but when a Democrat's in office, they keep screaming about border security, and frankly, the racists love it. The racists, those people that aren't white, I'm perfectly fine with those planes coming in here from Europe, but not those people. 27% inflation, 24%, which once again, every reason why we're having inflation is due to Republicans. Crime, 22%. National security, 21%. The economy, 18 points. By contrast, Democrats hold a double-digit edge on abortion. Coronavirus, 12 points. And climate change, 24. The reality is this, and I'm going to be blunt. Democrats should be getting ready to mop the floor with the Republicans on just two issues. But because they sit there, Democrats sit there and allow the narrative to get dictated for the country. And they keep sitting and telling themselves, you just wait. I've been writing a 450-page memo that just dismantles everything about this. And when they read it, I'm going to be the winner. No, they're not going to read it. They're not going to be the read it. They're not going to read it. They're not going to care because you're too damn high on yourselves and you don't have the guts to get down there and do what you need to do and get into the gutter and fight. And I'm not saying you have to take leaps and bounds here. For goodness sakes, all you have to do is point out the insanely bad response to coronavirus that the Republicans had. Or the fact that the economy and the inflation are going crazy because of the Trump tax bill they passed, which every single economist said was going to be horrible, and yet you passed anyway, and then mission accomplished. The Republicans have created this mess, and the longer the Democrats refuse to get in the mud and get dirty, the more they're taking the blame for it, because I can tell you right now, one thing Republicans are really good at is pointing at you and saying, you're the problem. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More on this when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. No, I'm not going to deny the fact that the media in this country writes news headlines that basically are geared towards trying to make Republicans feel better, even better about their lunatic fringe philosophies. But the Democrats allow them to go on out there and keep thinking of themselves that at some point, somewhere down the line, they're going to basically win the day. And so, and I kind of alluded to this too. I mean, these people that are insisting themselves, well, Jacob Fry is not going to get one single vote in Minneapolis. Is going to be the greatest. And then tomorrow, I don't know what's going to happen in Minneapolis. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in Minneapolis. But if all of a sudden it's a close race and you're sitting there, how in the world did this happen? Because you fell in love with the finale before the freaking show even started. Matt bringing up the exceptional point about that. As far as the media goes, how about California? Oh, Newsom's in trouble. Newsom's in trouble. Newsom's. Oh, yeah. It's a tomorrow. Oh, yeah. And he's probably going to win by a big margin. And so, yeah, it's probably. But that didn't stop. The news media went out there and painted that as, oh, it's a toss-up. Oh, Republicans, you got to feel good about this. No, you never had a chance. And hopefully that's the same thing that's going on in Virginia right now. But I'm going to tell you, if you know someone in Virginia, tell them to get out and vote. Democrats, you once again stop trying to be so damn clever. You don't have to be. You don't. Trump was a nightmare about coronavirus. For God's sakes, I mentioned earlier in this show about Kurt Dowd and Paul Gazelka sitting out last October on the state capitol stairs talking about how we should reopen everything a mere 3 weeks before the Republican Party themselves had a super spreader event, which likely killed one of their own senators. Everything they have said to do has been horrible. For God's sakes, most Republicans won't even admit whether or not they're vaccinated when it's clear most of them are. Keep it quiet. The science is on your side. Most people believe with masks. Most people believe in vaccinations. Take that freaking club and start whacking away. You can win these fights if you just use the facts that are on your side. Matt, they're expecting us to attack them on healthcare. So I'm going to talk about e-cars. God, no. The economy? The economy. You mean the economy that was in shatters when Donald Trump left office? The economy, the foreign trade markets that were destroyed by his tariff debacle? The deficit that exploded under Donald Trump and Republicans when they passed his tax bill? And it absolutely, everyone said, that's what's going to happen. And they did it anyway. And you are losing on that issue? Don't get me wrong. I understand. There are a lot of stupid, I talked about the one stupid idiot that was down in Iowa, the hog farmer. Who said, yeah, Donald Trump and the tariffs has killed my hog markets overseas, but I still think he's doing a great job. I get it. There are just some people who are too stupid for their own good. But you should be hammering away. Thank God Joe Biden's in there. Thank God Governor Walz is running our state economy right now. Thank God the House of Representatives is led by Melissa Hortman. Thank God, because I'll tell you what, if not for them, we would be in a disaster. Yeah, you can win on the pandemic, which they don't want you to talk about that. They don't want you. The Republicans don't want to have to discuss this. And you are doing them the biggest favor in every time. And I don't care who you are. I don't care if you think you're a politician and I don't like talking to the public. Get over yourself and get out there in front of a freaking microphone now. Doesn't have to be with my radio station. Doesn't have to be with me at all. But get out there and start fighting. Stop waiting for everyone will eventually realize I was right. No. You need to fight, and I am tired of milquetoast, weak, pathetic Democrats that allow, when they have a winning message, either shoot themselves in the foot or allow a narrative to be dictated, which basically puts them back on their heels. I guess we're not going to win today, but we fought the good... Shut up, shut up. Go out there and fight. I said this before, I'll say it again. What have you done to get 10 people registered to vote in the upcoming midterm election? Get 10 people registered to vote and make sure you get them to the polls. That's what wins. Native Roots Radio up next. Till tomorrow, see ya.